Blog Talk Radio.
If you find yourself in trouble, count on me, my friend. I'll get right up in trouble's face. You won't see him again. I've got the backbone, American. I've got the heart, American. I've got the will, American. Will you stand up, don't sit down? Stand up, don't back down. Stand up, shout it out. Stand up, let's make it loud. American, American.
Welcome to another exciting show with Southern Sense on Blog Talk Radio. So turn up the volume and enter our chat room, or grab your phones, call in, and join the conversation. Help us to restore the republic to this country and inspire the majority to be silent no longer.
Well, look me straight in the eye. Tell me what you see. I'll tell the truth every time. Yes, you can count on me. I've got the backbone, American. I've got the heart, American. I've got the will, American. Will you stand up, don't sit down? Stand up, don't back down. Stand up and shout it out. Stand up, let's make it loud. American, 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 American.
If it's Tuesday, it's Southern Sense here on Blog Talk Radio. American. I'm your hostess with the mostest, the radio chick, Annie. And unfortunately, my cool co-host is not again with me. He's just got one more week of campaigning to do, and he'll be back with us next Friday. Not this Friday, but the following Friday. So we wish Mike well. He's out there doing what we always ask people to do, get involved, and he's out there campaigning for his candidate. And that special election is coming up November 5th, next Tuesday, in 1 week. So Mike will be back with us on the 8th. I spoke with him last night. He's excited, he's hyped, he's ready to go, and he misses all of our BTR crowd. So good luck, Mike. Our fingers are crossed, and our prayers are going out for you. Let's hope your gal makes it. I want to welcome everyone here to Southern Sense. We've got a fantastic guest coming in at quarter after the hour, Mike Cutler. He is a retired INS agent and also a BTR host. He has his own show here on, I believe, Saturday nights. And he's also a frequent contributor on all the major networks, especially Fox News. He's testified before Congress and the Senate in reference to immigration, and he has a lot to say. And we're going to have an exciting hour and a half with him. Hope everyone has been remembering and saying prayers for those who are the victims of Hurricane Sandy. It was exactly 1 year ago today she made landfall here on the United States and devastated parts of New Jersey, Staten Island, Long Island. And those that follow the show know that back earlier in July, I ended up remotely hosting my show up in New York. My husband and I went up there because a friend of ours suddenly passed away. And he and his wife were victims of Hurricane Sandy. And they lived out all the way in the east end of Long Island, and they lost their home. They lost everything. And FEMA has yet to live up to their standards, and unfortunately, they never came through. A year ago, it happened, and a lot of people are still waiting. And thanks a lot, government, and now you're in charge of our health care. Wonderful. Okay, and it sounds like someone is messing around with my phone line, and I hope they get off, because now we're broadcasting live. And anyone that listens to the show knows we start off with a dedication to a fallen hero. And I originally was going to do this for just one sergeant, but when I read the entire story, four soldiers were killed in this incident, and I could not leave any of them out. So today's show is dedicated to Army Sergeant Joseph M. Peters, Private First Class Cody Peterson, Sergeant Patrick Hawkins, First Lieutenant Jennifer Monroe. They were all killed on October 6th, 2013, this past month, in Zaghari District in Afghanistan by an IED, an improvised explosive device. So this dedication goes out to all four of them. Four soldiers killed and 14 wounded in Afghanistan in early October were on special operations raid of a Taliban bomber maker's compound in the southern part of the country. An assault force of 40 soldiers from the 75th Ranger Regiment entered a compound in the Zaghari district west of Kandahar on October 5th. That one special operations official described as a suicide vest and improvised explosive device factory. But as the Rangers approached, a man wearing a suicide vest emerged from a nearby building and detonated it. As other Rangers moved in to help the wounded, a series of buried improvised bombs, some pressure plate activated or daisy chained, detonated, according to Lieutenant Colonel Brian DeSantis, a spokesman for the 75th Ranger Regiment. They had clearly prepared it for a defense, DeSantis said. There were multiple IEDs. There were 14 people seriously wounded, DeSantis said. The soldiers killed were Sergeant Patrick C. Hawkins, 25, of Carlisle, Pennsylvania, and Private First Class Cody J. Patterson, 24, of Philomath, Oregon, both with Company B, 3rd Battalion, 75th Ranger Regiment, Fort Benning, Georgia. Sergeant Joseph M. Peters, 24, of Springfield, Missouri, a CID special agent with the 5th Military Police Battalion, Vicenza, Italy, and Captain Jennifer M. Monroe, 25, of San Diego, California, a nurse with a special ops cultural support team. Colonel Christopher S. Vanek, commander of the 75th Ranger Regiment, called Hawkins a man of character and commitment and said Patterson had a limitless future. Sergeant Patrick C. Hawkins. Hawkins was moving to the aid of a fallen comrade when he was killed, said Colonel Patrick J. Ellis, commander of 3rd Battalion. His actions that night were in keeping with the epitome of the Ranger Creed. I will never leave a fallen comrade. Hawkins, who turned 25 just 5 days before he was killed, was on his fourth deployment. He served as a rifleman, gun team leader, and Ranger lead teamer with Company B. He holds the Ranger tab, the combat infantry badge, the parachutist badge, and the U.S. Army Expert Rifle Marksman Qualification Badge. He was posthumously awarded the Bronze Star, Meritorious Service Medal, and Purple Heart. He is survived by his wife and parents. Private First Class Cody J. Patterson. PFC Cody Patterson was the poster child for the Ranger Regiment, Ellis said of the rifleman, who was killed on his second deployment to Afghanistan. He was courageous and dedicated, and lost his life while fighting tenaciously against our nation's enemies alongside his fellow Rangers. Our thoughts and prayers are with the Patterson family. Patterson holds the Parachutist Badge and the Army Expert Rifle Marksmanship Qualification Badge. He was posthumously awarded the Bronze Star Medal, Meritorious Service Medal, and Purple Heart. Patterson is survived by his parents and his sister, all in Philomath, Oregon. The family of Cody Patterson is proud of his service to his country, his bravery, and his sacrifice. There are not enough words to express the depth of our heartbreak over his tragic loss. We will feel his absence forever, his family said in a statement. Cody was a small-town boy with a large extended family and deep ties to his hometown and surrounding communities. He will be missed and remembered by so many for his sense of humor, compassion, and strength. Captain Jennifer M. Marino. Marino was commissioned into the Army as a nurse. She completed the Army Airborne course in 2009 and served in the medical surgical unit at Madigan before she deployed in June, her first tour, with a Special Operations Cultural Support Team. Such teams are typically composed of female soldiers who can engage Afghan women. She was making a difference in Afghanistan, and that legacy will live on, Ellis said. Marino posthumously received the Combat Action Badge, Bronze Star, Meritorious Service Medal, Purple Heart, Afghanistan Campaign Medal, and a NATO Medal. She previously held the Parachutist Badge. She was also posthumously promoted to captain. She was survived by her mother, two sisters, and her brother, who was also a soldier. And finally, Sergeant Joseph M. Peters. Peters was on his third deployment. He completed courses in protective services, human intelligence collection, crime scene investigation, and analysis interrogator collaboration. Major General David Quintock, the Army's Provost Marshal General and commander of Army CID, praised Peters. His death is a reminder of the unequaled contributions our military members and their families make on a daily basis in the defense of the freedoms that we enjoy and value so deeply. He has posthumously received the Combat Action Badge, Bronze Star, and Purple Heart. Peters is survived by his wife and 20-month-old son. This show is dedicated to these four courageous men and women, and we dedicate this song by Todd Allen Herndon, My Name is America. God bless them and their families.
Born in the grip of oppression, I fought for my liberty. I paid with the blood of my people. Freedom has never been free. Now my door's always open to dreamers and friends. When I'm attacked, I protect and defend. Because my name is America, I stand proud and free. My name is America, don't tread on me. I cannot be broken, I cannot be shamed. If you hurt me, I'll get stronger, and I'll rise up from the fire. Taken from others, others gave it to me. They believe in the virtues I stand for, my respect for humanity. Now I'm challenged by tyrants who envy my power, but their vicious deeds become my finest hour. Because my name is America, I stand proud and free. My name is America, don't tread on me. I cannot be broken, I cannot be shamed. If you hurt me, I'll get strong.
My name is Erica Todd Allen Herndon, and you can win a free autographed copy of that DVD if you go to our website, southernsense.webs.com, and enter into the members area. We have a contest going up, and it will end. I may extend it to the end of November because I'm looking for people to get into it. But check out the contest under the members section at southernsense.webs.com. And one of the prizes is that DVD autographed by Todd Allen Herndon himself. And I want to welcome aboard our guest. And I do have to apologize if I sound a little staticky or scratchy or whatever. My phone lines have been down for the last 24 hours. And just seconds before going on the air, the phone company, the brilliant phone company, just got them up and running. So I'm still working off of a hotspot off of my cell phones. So I want to welcome our guest. He's a retired INS agent and fellow BTR host, Mike Cutler. Good afternoon, Mike.
Good afternoon, Ann. Thank you so much for having me. I'm glad it's not your throat, but your telephone.
And, you know, I'm doing the intro in the beginning, and I can hear them clicking in and on the line. And I'm going, these bubbleheads, I told them I needed up by 1 o'clock. So
wait a second. Are you sure it wasn't the NSA? The NSA?
Oh, yeah. Maybe it was the NSA. I think I hear the helicopters over my house right now.
But, there you go.
Brilliant. And you know what the whole problem was? It wasn't my lines or anything else like that. It was some MasterCard in their headquarters. So someone just had to simply go over, pop out the old card, and put a new one in. But it took them 24 hours to figure that out and do it.
Well, I, maybe the gerbils weren't running fast enough in their cages. You know, I used to have a sign over my desk back when I worked for the government that said, to err is human, but to really screw up, you need a computer.
That's true. That's true. Now, I got a friend of mine in the chat room, Dana, and he's saying he's been having troubles on and off also. So I guess I'm not the only one. So, Dana, welcome to the South. God bless the people here in the South.
Well, listen, we're up on the anniversary of Sandy. You don't even want to know what was happening in New York last year at this time. So these are minor technical difficulties.
Yeah, I did at the beginning of the show mention a memory, ask everyone to remember in their prayers the victims of Hurricane Sandy. And I know a lot of people up there, it's been a year and nothing has been done. You know, some of them are still living out in hotels and staying with families and friends. A friend of mine, they were all the way out on the east end of Long Island, past the Hamptons, and they lost everything. They lost everything. And
well,
the insurance didn't give them enough. FEMA gave them practically nothing, and they had to leave New York.
That's awful. I remember that night, you know, I was worried that, gee whiz, you know, hurricane and all the winds, I was worried that maybe the roofs of the houses would come off, and up. Nothing happened to the roof, and I'm saying, well, this wasn't such a big deal. And I remembered standing on my porch, and I live in Brooklyn, and I saw water, like little geysers, shooting out of the storm drains on each street corner. And I said, I've never seen that before. What in the world is going on? And I went into my basement, and I felt like that scene from Jaws with Richard Dreyfuss, where he comes up and says, we need a bigger boat. My basement had water pouring in from everywhere, and everything in my basement was floating.
Oh, wow. Wow.
And we were lucky, because just about a mile from my house, some poor guy went into his basement and then tried to get out, and before he could get out, he wound up drowning because the water went clear up to the roof of the basement. And in fact, the water in my basement went up about 4 feet. So, I mean, it was just something I'd never in my life experienced. And my parents had bought this house when I was 11 years old. So to see that happen, to call it startling is an understatement. But we survived, and weird things happened. I think in the 30s we had similar storms that ravaged parts of the East Coast. These things will happen periodically. But, you know, it's a good segue to an article I just sent you. And for those of you who aren't familiar with me, I want to put two websites out there so I don't get so caught up in our conversation that I forget to do it. My own personal website is michaelcutler.net, C-U-T-L-E-R, michaelcutler.net. My other website that I'd like you to visit, it's not mine, but I contribute, It's Californians for Population Stabilization. They're located in beautiful downtown Santa Barbara, California. Their website is capsweb.org, C-A-P-S, capsweb.org. I've been writing for them for a bunch of years. They've helped to fund a couple of my trips that I've taken around the country because increasingly, you know, TV doesn't want to cover the subject. There was a time when I might do, goodness, 12, 15 television interviews per month. As a New Yorker, we had a front row seat, tragically, to 9/11. As an agent, I've worked on investigations of terrorists as well as transnational narcotics traffickers and their organizations. And so very often I've been called upon to provide perspective. I've testified before a bunch of congressional hearings. I think, in fact, this past March was my 16th hearing. I was called by the Senate Judiciary Committee. I gave testimony to the 9/11 Commission, and the media was covering it. And within the last two or three years, this push for globalism has become so pervasive that I'm happy if I get to go on TV once a month these days, or maybe once every 3 months, because there is a mythology that we're going to get to today. But one of the things that really caught my eye, there are lots of people who try to keep me aware of what's going on because there's so much happening. I sometimes feel like I'm standing under Niagara Falls with a water glass trying to catch all the water. And this article just blew me away last night. The Daily Caller published it. And the title of the article is Global Warming Gets Nearly Twice as Much Taxpayer Money as Border Security. How's that for a title of a story?
Yeah, I just pulled it up. And Mike, if you hold your breath just for a second, we got a caller waiting in on the line. Let me bring the caller in live.
Absolutely.
And you're on the air live with Southern Sense. I'm your host, Annie. Our guest is Mike Cutler. Who am I speaking to?
My name is Dijon. Can you hear me okay?
We
yes,
hear you fine,
so.
Dijon. Thank you for the call.
Yeah, thanks. I'm calling from Illinois. And, you know, I just wanted to ask Mike Cutler if it's okay if I can ask him a question.
Absolutely.
Can I suck your balls?
Oh, sorry about that, Mike. We always get ourselves a little troll in here.
I'd love to suck your balls.
Oh. Here we go. All right. Sorry about that, folks. And we just lost our guest, Mike Cutler. So, Mike, if you're listening in, call back. I accidentally dropped you. Oh, well. There is an article. Mike was starting to talk about, and I hope that he calls back in a few seconds. He realizes he got disconnected. And the article is really outrageous, and I'm going to be looking at it. He just sent it over to me, and this is exactly true. The White House released a report and reported to the House Republicans that there are now 18 federal agencies engaged in global warming activities in 2013. And we got Mike back in on the line. And Mike, I apologize,
yes.
And I was trying to
no,
get
it's not,
call and
not your fault.
Him.
fun for the feeble-minded. You know, you and I spent our careers in law enforcement, and there's no shortage of wackaloons who are out there, and so be it. What can I tell you? It tells you about the intellectual capability of the jerk who just did that.
Oh, man, he sounded like a teabagger to me, huh?
might have been. Goodness gracious.
You know, if you don't get these calls, then you know you're not doing something right. You know?
Well, and you know, that's right. You know, JFK said that you judge a man by his friends as well as his enemies, and I'm proud of both groups because I think I've acquired them for the right reason. But I have to tell you, you know, and this is something that your audience should realize. I do speaking engagements all over the United States, and I'm very happy to do it. I go to college campuses. I have been on college. In fact, the most recent interview that's been arranged on November 15th, I will be at a college campus on Long Island here in New York at Briarcliff College. But I was at Seattle, Washington at Central Washington University or Washington Central. Forgive me, folks, if you're listening from Washington, my recollection's a bit rusty of the name of the college. Great school, great hospitality, good folks out there. In fact, one of the young men who at the time was a law student, he's now a prosecutor, put my website together for me. I don't even know how to thank him for doing this for me. I mean, really amazing. Tony Swartz is the guy's name, and he's incredible. But when I was out there, we had a bunch of protesters, and they were ranting and raving and waving picket signs, and there were about 30 or 40 of them. And what was remarkable was that by the end of the discussion that night, the protesters, with the exception of one misguided professor who stormed out, the students all and the protesters all came up to me and asked if I would take a picture with them and provide my autograph. You know, there is so much misinformation, so much lies, so many lies, so much BS on the immigration issue. And I want to start out by clearing some air, especially and the stench of that caller at the same time. The immigration laws of the United States have nothing to do with race or ethnicity. I happen to be Jewish. I was named for my grandmother who was slaughtered in the Holocaust. Her name was Malka. My Hebrew name is Melech, which means king. Her Hebrew name was Malka, which means queen. My mother came here as a 14-year-old girl ahead of the Holocaust. She came legally, lived by herself in a rooming house, and worked in an umbrella factory for all of $3 a week, and this was just before the Holocaust. So this was the late 1920s, because, you know, the Holocaust started to rear its ugly head long before the Second World War broke out. And so, you know, there's no way on God's green earth that I could even begin to think about enforcing laws if they were about racism, bigotry, mistreatment of any groups of individuals. The only distinction that the immigration laws of the United States make is about whether or not an individual is a citizen or not. And a person who is not a citizen is properly referred to as an alien. And because of Jimmy Carter and because of Newspeak, and by the way, I'm a registered Democrat. I'm not even a conservative. And Jimmy Carter was arguably one of the worst presidents. I think, you know, we've seen worse. We're experiencing worse, need I say more, in this day and age, in my judgment. But Jimmy Carter demanded that no immigration employee refer to illegal aliens as illegal aliens. And we were all, those of us who worked for the old INS, Immigration and Naturalization Service, were infuriated. The term alien, and I want you folks to understand what it means. The term alien simply means any person, not a citizen or national of the United States. That's not Mike Cutler's definition. That's the definition contained in the Immigration and Nationality Act of the United States. That's that all-encompassing body of law that pertain to who we let into the country, who may stay here, under what circumstances they may be granted lawful status, under what circumstances they might be deemed deportable from the United States. This is the all-encompassing Bible, if you will, for immigration. And all that we're talking about are people who are not citizens. And as any society would properly do, there's a distinction made between American citizen and non-citizen, just as we make distinctions between members of our family and people who are not part of our family. But unlike the criticism that we keep hearing, what you need to know is that the United States lawfully admits over 1 million lawful immigrants into the United States each and every year. That is more than the rest of the world combined. We naturalize over 600,000 new citizens each and every year. Again, more than the rest of the world combined. We admit tens of millions of non-immigrant visitors into the United States each and every year. And that includes hundreds of thousands of authorized foreign workers. And the way those programs are being administered today, it goes against the law, but not against the policies not only of this administration, but you can go back to George W. Bush. You can go back quite a while, because those laws are supposed to prevent foreign workers from competing unfairly with American workers, because that was how we built the American dream and the middle class prior to the Second World War. The enforcement and administration of the immigration laws fell to the Labor Department. The idea was to not let workers in, to flood the market and cheapen wages. And then we come to a point in recent history where a gentleman, and I use that term as loosely as you could possibly use it, by the name of Alan Greenspan, came along and he testified for Chuck Schumer, the architect of comprehensive immigration reform. Chuck used to be my congressman. Notwithstanding my being a registered Democrat, I will tell you he was never my representative. And Alan Greenspan testified for him. And it was so remarkable because this happened on April 30th, 2009. I watched the hearing live I couldn't believe what I was seeing and hearing. And Greenspan referred to Americans with skills as the privileged elite. And he claimed that these Americans, the privileged elite, were earning a wage premium that needed to be slashed. I kid you not. What he called the privileged elite, and you or I and our listeners would refer to as the middle class. That was what was so mind-boggling about the statement. And here is what he said. He said that we needed to open up immigration quotas to let in the H-1B visas. You know, we keep hearing about Mexico and the Mexican border and all this other business. In point of fact, more money in remittances gets wired to India from the United States than to Mexico by their workers in the United States. Most people don't realize it. Immigration is not about Latinos. It's not about the Mexican border. Yes, the Mexican border is significant. But I've often come to say that securing the Mexican border, while it should absolutely be a priority, it has to be a reality. It's the equivalent of a wing on an airplane. Without the wing, the airplane won't fly. If you don't secure the Mexican border, whatever else you're doing isn't going to work. But the wing is not the only significant component to an airplane. A wing by itself goes nowhere. It's an entire system, immigration is, and it's a dysfunctional system, not because the laws are inherently broken, but because the laws are not being effectively enforced and administered. And this really marches lockstep with what Bill Gates called for when he testified before Congress in 2007. And then you have Greenspan, the architect of the meltdown, who provided subprime mortgages to illegal aliens and bragged about it when he appeared before the Federal Reserve Bank, where he was the director back in 2005. And then in 2009, as we say in Brooklyn, he had the chutzpah to testify for Schumer. And he even talked about the H-1B visa specifically. This is what Alan Greenspan had to say. And by the way, folks, I want you to know that I have a personal standard that I meet for myself every day. If I am in public, whether it's on a radio program like Ann's terrific show, or I'm on CNN or Fox News or whichever program I'm on or before Congress, I always make certain that the information that I provide you is accurate and verifiable. What I am reading to you is a copy of the transcript of Alan Greenspan's prepared testimony. If you go to my website, michaelcutler.net or capsweb.org, or if you go to the Senate Judiciary Committee website, you will be able to pull up a link and you can watch Greenspan testify. I was on a radio show the day after. I was still so angry at what I heard. I was asked what I thought when I watched him testify. I said that I thought I was witnessing the first time someone testified while suffering from rigor mortis. You can tell I don't like this guy. The young lady whose show I was on told me that she had mascara running down her cheeks for the balance of her show. But, I mean, really, I cannot stomach what this guy wants to do to American middle-class workers, what he wants to do to American middle-class families, what he's willing to do to America's national security so that banks can make more money. And I could prove it with what he said. He started out, well, he didn't start out, but here is where he talks about H-1B visas. Now, this is Alan Greenspan's words, not me. If you're angry, don't be angry with me. I'm just reporting the news. The quantity of temporary H-1B visas issued each year is far too small to meet the need, especially in the near future, as the economy copes with the forthcoming retirement wave of skilled baby boomers. As Bill Gates, the chairman of Microsoft, succinctly testified before Congress in March 2007, quote, America will find it infinitely more difficult to maintain its technological leadership if it shuts out the very people who are most able to help us compete, unquote. He added, quote, we are driving away the world's best and brightest precisely when we need them the most, end quote. Now, think about that. First of all,
it took 2 seconds to think about it, because here we have record number of unemployment and a record number of people not being recorded in those unemployment statistics because they decide to opt out of the job market. These are all highly skilled people.
Well, they didn't decide.
Every
the job market
job
decided for them, Ann. The job market decided for them. They didn't say, I'm going to go on a permanent vacation. They were booted out the door.
Exactly. And instead, you get in cheaper workers from abroad. So here goes your immigration guys. You know, cut out the American, send them packing, send them onto the government dole permanently, and then bring in these other individuals and then gain their vote. Now, we do have another caller, Mike. Just a second. I do know this person, so I know it's
okay,
not a troll.
I'm glad to hear that. Okay.
I know this is not a troll. Matter of fact, I deliberately left someone sitting on hold for a while because it looked like he tried to spoof his name and come back as a different individual, and he finally hung up. But anyway, this is another fellow BTR host. He's got a new station out, Frederick Douglass Foundation Radio, and his name is Thomas. Good afternoon, Thomas.
Hi, Annie. How are you?
All right. You're on the air with our guest, Mike Cutler.
Yes, and I have an interesting question. Now, and this is directed at the 1% of the rich who never seems to get attacked. Because I don't know if anyone has caught that dynamic, but it always seems that the 1% that's always attacked by the mainstream media is the 1% from the right, conservatives. So if Alan Greenspan feels that the middle class is the privileged elite, and excuse my expression for a minute, but what the hell does that make the liberal 1%?
Well, you know, we have to really get away from liberal versus conservative. These are American issues. I appreciate the call, and I appreciate the question. But, you know, both parties are really in bed with the people that are either members of special interest groups who have deep pockets, or they are people who themselves are earning or are getting lots of money, getting very wealthy off of the exploitation of American taxpayers who tend to be the middle class. We are caught in the squeeze play by both political parties today.
That seems to be very true. I was having a little bit of a problem here with Thomas's microphone. Thomas, are you calling in on a cell phone?
Yeah, it's my cell phone. I'm on speakerphone. I apologize for that.
All right, that's better now.
Okay. Mike, and I agree with that. The reason why I specifically said, the liberal 1%, I was in a way making a point as to how they always want to target, the 1% conservatives who are wealthy, the business owners, while at the same time, those who are also in Washington, both, like you said, both parties, they are in bed together. So I said that to specifically make that point. And I agree 100%. It is an American issue. And I wish that, the elites on both the left and the right would stop the class warfare. If you have an issue, make it about everybody and don't put yourself on a pedestal like you're better than everyone else. So I agree with your premise 100%.
Well, I'm glad to hear that, Thomas. And, you know, it's remarkable, and it's very disconcerting to me. You know, I'm registered as a Democrat, and Ann knows this because the way that I met Ann, I was given the privilege of addressing the Tea Party convention the last 2 years down in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. Now, what I found remarkable was when I told the folks there, I said, look, I'm registered as a Democrat. I vote as an independent. I'm a labor guy. My dad was a construction worker. He was a plumber. He died of lung cancer when I was 19. He was 57, in part because he had a terrible Chesterfield cigarette addiction, but also because he worked in the Navy shipyard during the Second World War. And so, you know, to me, American workers, blue collar, white collar, these are our heroes. And the construction workers of America built this country, literally. And today, to listen to politicians talk about the work Americans won't do, quite frankly, lights my fuse. What do you think of that statement, Thomas?
I think that's 100% right on. And I want to thank you for something.
What's that?
I want to thank you for showing and proving a point. As a conservative who's black, believe you me, and I'm sure you probably know, I've been called every single name under the sun. But I want to thank you for the fact that you have just proven, and there's many individuals who are Democrats who have proven time and time again that while two people may not have the same ideology, when it comes down to American principles of being American, we all can agree on that, and I appreciate that. I appreciate that about you. And that, in a way, it, you know, while I've never lost faith in my country, it shows me that there is still hope and that the American populace has not been completely lulled to sleep. So I thank you for showing that we still can work together on issues, whether one's a conservative and one's a liberal.
I appreciate that, Thomas. You know, I often remind people that the First Amendment has components to it that a lot of people don't realize. You know, if you ask the average person, what's the First Amendment about, they'll say freedom of press, freedom of speech, freedom of religion. And they don't realize that there's two more pillars. The right to seek redress of grievances. And by the way, if you don't have grievances today especially, you better check for a flatline EEG. And the right to peaceably assemble. The Founding Fathers understood the necessity of debate, discourse, argument if need be. All they said is do it peaceably. Leave your guns, your clubs, and your knives at home. And, you know, in point of fact, it was a woman by the name of, I'm trying to recall her name, Barbara Jordan was her name. She was a congresswoman. She was African-American. She was very liberal. And the Jordan Commission report was a scathing attack on illegal immigration because she properly pointed out that by not controlling immigration, we were driving more people into poverty. And this was years ago. What I'd love to know is why the Black Caucus in Washington isn't looking out for all Americans, and in particular, Black Americans. If it's the Black Caucus, why aren't they looking at the record levels of unemployment and poverty in the American Black community? Isn't that an interesting question, Thomas?
Oh, I'm sorry, I had muted his mic. Let me bring him back on so he can respond to that.
Sure.
And Thomas, you're back on live.
Okay. You bring up a very good question, and I've been wondering the same thing. And I'll just kind of give you a vivid example of that. I went to an NAACP forum about a couple years ago, and one of their platforms that they have adopted is that they're pushing the embracing more of illegal immigration, and specifically the Hispanic community, which there's nothing wrong with that. But the congressional, I believe it was the Congressional Budget Office or the GAO, one of those particular offices actually came out with a study and said that if amnesty is passed with the immigration bill, the community that's going to be disproportionately affected more than anybody else is the Black community.
Yep.
And yet you have not heard a word from the Congressional Black Caucus.
And the reason
is because a lot of those men and women, they take they're given specific things what they're told to say. I know this for a fact. Emmanuel Cleaver is, I'm in his district, the 5th district in Kansas City, Missouri. That man does not show up here unless he has to push a national talking point. Any other than that, he does not show up. And so you hit the nail on the head.
Well, you know, it's remarkable, and it's infuriating to me because now you are seeing people, and some people are falling for it, maybe the jerk who called in before you did, that, you know, this is equivalent of the civil rights movement, and it's not. You know, I get frustrated being Jewish and being the grandson of a woman who died in the Holocaust, and many other family members were killed in the Holocaust also. And then if you look at the issue of slavery and civil rights in America, how in the world do we turn around and talk about people who intentionally run our borders and say that they are the moral equivalent of African Americans whose ancestors were dragged here in the holds of ships against their will and say that these are equal? And remember, blacks were born in the United States. The civil rights movement was about providing American citizens, irrespective of race or religion or ethnicity, equal standing under the eyes of the law and in our government and in our society. And that's something every American should get behind and strive for. But this is about illegal aliens. So how in the world do you talk about civil rights, which are the rights that are supposed to be enjoyed by citizens, and then confer them upon a population that came here in violation of our borders and laws that are designed to achieve two goals: protect the lives of Americans and the jobs of American workers? What do you think of that statement, Thomas?
Let me answer that question. And I'll say it in tongue-in-cheek, because the only way I believe that they can make that equivalent between illegal immigration and civil rights, unless they're saying that the slaves illegally immigrated to America, but that kind of does not fly, considering they were brought over here illegally.
No, it doesn't fly, and there's nothing equivalent about one with the other. But, you know, most people don't get it. You know, when we were talking about erecting a fence on the border, and again, the immigration system needs a lot more than a fence on the border. Excuse me, but a fence should be part of the plan, should be a component, again. But they were saying, well, Berlin, think of, Germany with the wall. Well, wait a moment. The Berlin Wall wasn't designed to keep people from getting in. It was designed to keep people from getting out. If you live in a mansion and put tall gates at the edge of your property to protect your property and protect your own security, you can't look at that gate and then say, well, prisons have gates, so I guess you live in a jail.
I love that one, Mike. I really do love that. You know, the worst part about it is we've got ample laws already on the books.
Yes.
We've got the law in place to secure the border, not just to the south, but to the north also, using not only a wall, but through surveillance, electronics.
Well, it goes beyond that. I'll get to that in a second. It even goes beyond that. See, we have 50 border states. We're being told, by the way, Thomas, thank you so much for your call. It was thought-provoking, and it was good speaking with you.
You're welcome, and maybe I can have you on my show sometime.
Absolutely. You can reach me through my website, michaelcutler.net. Be delighted to join you. How's that?
Awesome. Thank you so much. Thanks, man.
Thank you for a really great series of questions. And I've been making this point forever, that we don't have just four border states. But this is the narrative that has been created so the politicians and the other characters out there can turn this into a race issue, and it's not. Any state that has a seaport, access to the 95,000 miles of coastline that goes around the country, all the little inlets and marinas, and if you look at the Gulf Coast and so forth, according to a Coast Guardsman who wrote a book, he said 95,000 miles, I'll accept it. It sounds reasonable what our coastline looks like. We have international airports in just about every state. So any state that has a seaport, access to the coastline, an international airport, or lies along the northern border as well as the southern border are border states. What does that mean? We have 50 border states. So the problem that we have is that the politicians want to distract people. This is a magic act. You know, you go watch the magic show, the guy comes out there, the dramatic lighting and the smoke and the mirrors and the light, and then they bring out some girl in a skimpy little getup and she's, prancing all over the stage. It's a 15-ring circus and nobody knows where to look. That's what they're doing with immigration. They're saying, oh, look, the Mexican border will secure the border. And you know what this reminds me of? I'm sure you've had the experience of buying a new car. And you go into the showroom and there's a couple of tactics that car salesmen are taught to employ in dealing with a customer. And first thing that they have to do is to overcome the customer's resistance to saying yes. Because everybody knows that once you say yes to a salesman, gosh, you're going down a real slippery slope real quickly. So the first thing they do, you're sitting in this car and you're looking around and you're checking it out, and the first thing he says to you is, are you looking for a car? We've all been there. No, I was looking for a glass of milk, and I thought it might be in the back seat. Of course you're there looking for a car, so immediately you say, yes, I am. What do you think of this car? Well, it's nice. What do you think of the color? Well, blue is okay. I personally like red better. And he immediately seizes on it and says, wow, if I could get it for you in red, do you want to buy it?
Mm-hmm.
You didn't even tell him that you weren't looking for the sports car you were sitting in. You were just curious what it looked like, and he's trying to sell you the car you didn't want. Then he says to you, write down a figure you had in mind in terms of what you're willing to spend on car payments every month. Why doesn't he just ask you to tell him? Because he wants you to get used to handling a pen in his presence, because before you leave, he's determined to get you to sign on the dotted line. So everything is thought out as a strategy to get you to say yes and to get you to sign on the dotted line. What they're doing with immigration is they're saying, if we could secure the border, would it be okay then? Never mind that that's one of how many other components that have failed. But it's this kabuki theater. It's about distraction. It's about bait and switch. And people have no idea what to even think anymore. And then they spend tons of money on programs that don't work, that were designed not to work, because the goal is to keep the borders open so that the labor keeps pouring across the border. So they come up with something called the virtual fence. And I remember I was on with Lou Dobbs one day when he was still at CNN, and Lou Dobbs, in that Lou Dobbs voice, said to me, Mike, what do you think of the virtual fence? And I said, Lou, it's going to do what it was designed to do, cost tons of money and stop virtually nobody. And it wound up that we spent over $1 billion on it, and it stopped virtually nobody. This has all been kabuki theater so that we could drive down the wages, so that we could do what Mr. Greenspan said that we should be doing, because here is what he also went on to say. And I want to just finish a little piece of what he said, because, you know, if I have outrage, I want you and your listeners to have equal outrage. Because
go ahead.
He then went on and gave two reasons why we need to open up immigration quotas. And this will make things so abundantly clear for everybody. And I want you to think of Greenspan when you listen to any one of those knuckleheads in Washington talk about comprehensive reform. Now, this is the real agenda, folks. First, skilled workers and their families form new households. They will, of necessity, move into vacant housing units. Isn't that a nice way to describe an American home lost to an American family because of foreclosure? A vacant housing unit, okay? The current glut of which is depressing prices of American homes, and of course, house price declines are a major factor in mortgage foreclosures and in the plunge in value of the vast quantity of U.S. mortgage-backed securities that has contributed substantially to the disabling of our banking system. In other words, if we could jack up the price of houses, the banking industry could make tons of more money. Of course, at the same time, the houses would be priced out of the reach of the average American family. Does Mr. Greenspan care? No, he does not. Does a fence, and you know, you were a cop, a fence is someone who sells stolen property. Does a fence look at an heirloom ring and say, my God, the woman who lost this must be devastated? No. He looks at it and says, how much can I get for it? There's no emotion attached. How much can I get for it? Dollars and cents, period.
What's in it for me?
Right. If I get my cut, I don't care. I don't care if it belonged to that woman's grandmother and it's the only thing she had from her. If I can get my money, screw her. And that's what they're doing to the American people. And then this is the one that really will blow your mind. The second bonus of opening up the quotas for the H-1B and high-tech visas would address the increasing concentration of income in this country. Greatly expanding our quotas for the highly skilled would lower wage premiums of skilled over the lesser skilled. Skill shortages in America exist because we are shielding our skilled labor force from world competition. Quotas have been substituted for the wage pricing mechanism. In the process, we have created a privileged elite, his words, privileged elite, whose incomes are being supported at non-competitively high levels by immigration quotas on skilled professionals. Eliminating such restrictions would reduce at least some of our income inequality. Is it inequality to make more money because you went to college and got a PhD versus the guy that dropped out of high school? That is what he calls wage inequality. It's not about race or ethnicity or gender. You know, equal work, equal pay, I agree with it. But here what Greenspan says, go to school, get that degree, mortgage yourself up to your eyeballs, and you shouldn't make much more than the guy who dropped out of school.
Spread the wealth. It's another version of spread the
wealth.
Yeah,
well, no, it's give me your wealth. We're not going to spread it. We're going to concentrate it up here in the stratosphere where I live. This is such a flipping outrage.
It is. It is. You know, who are you to tell me what my value is? You know, if I go and work for someone, which I have, I wasn't just a cop. I've worked, had my own business, worked and managed several others. And if my work was better than anyone else around me, then I expect better wages than anyone else around me. And I had no qualms going up to my boss and saying, hey, wait a minute, I increased productivity here, you know, 75% in this area, another 55% over here, and I would have the actual facts and figures and show them how, you know, work hours were saved, time was saved, money was saved. Now, and I would say, at this point, I think I'm worth, you know, a raise and change in benefits.
Well, but in that case, it might have worked that way, but here what he's specifically talking about
is doing
bringing
it the opposite.
What they're saying is bring in competition to drive down the wages. And in fact, Dan Rather did a piece. I just wrote an article that CAPS will be posting that I called The Impact Comprehensive Immigration Reform Would Have on High-Skilled American Workers. Dan Rather reports, did an amazing story, and I happened to trip over it by chance. My wife was getting up to get breakfast for our son at 6 o'clock in the morning, and I woke up, and I started doing a little channel surfing at that ungodly hour. And I try to avoid O Dark 30 unless I'm traveling somewhere. But Dan Rather had a one-hour special on HDNet News, which he now does, called Dan Rather Reports. And this story was entitled, Dan Rather Reports, No Thanks for Everything. And he interviewed three or four IT workers, computer workers, who had the education, the skills, and were fired so that they could be replaced by cheaper workers from India. And in fact, the first woman that he interviewed had worked for Microsoft, had her MBA in computer science, was a Phi Beta Kappa graduate, was a division chief, and she came to work one day and got blindsided. She walked in thinking it was just like any other day, and they called her into the office, handed her an envelope, and said, here's your severance pay. Here are some boxes. Clean out your office. You don't work here anymore.
And what was the reason for
that? At the end, they had one guy come on who said, I worked as a volunteer for Obama. I helped him to get elected, and he betrayed us. Which I found very interesting for Dan Rather, because you know he's a big supporter, at least my understanding is, of the Democratic Party. So I think that a lot of people are waking up to this nightmare that this administration is doing everything in its power, aided and abetted by members of Congress from both parties who favor comprehensive reform to create unfair competition for American workers so that we can drive down the wages of Americans, we can lower their expectation of benefits and wages. And meanwhile, look at the damage that's being done, because talk television, you look at the talking heads on TV, they allow people to get away with some pretty outrageous statements and nobody challenges them. I was watching a program a couple of days ago, and this was when President Obama was talking about immigration, even while they were holding hearings about Obamacare being a flat-out disaster. And so the speculation was, well, is he doing it to distract people, you know, this magic kabuki theater we just talked about. Why is he talking about immigration? And they had on a talk show host to talk about immigration reform. And I have to tell you, I mean, look, and everyone's entitled to opinions, and we all have them. But if this is a major national news program and you're talking about immigration, what can a talk show host contribute that's going to educate anybody about the topic? Think of how many times people are brought onto a set to talk about national security issues, talk about economic issues, and their talk show hosts or whatever. These are not America's best and brightest, and I don't care what side of the argument they're on. I don't care if they agree with me. If you're going to have a program that's supposed to educate the public, bring in people who are experts. The average American has gotten to the point of being dumbed down so badly that they don't know what an expert is. An expert is somebody, in my judgment, who would qualify as an expert witness in a courtroom if there was a trial. That's somebody who is credible and whose opinion is worth at least considering. You don't have to agree with them, but at least they've earned the right. My father, may he rest in peace, would not tolerate me running my mouth at the dinner table unless I could substantiate what I was saying. And if I would go out there flapping my mouth with an opinion that was based on bupkis, my father would give me that father look, and those of us blessed to have had fathers in their lives know what that look looks like. And he would say to me, Mike, empty barrels make a lot of noise. And that was a very nice way of him saying to me, zip it. So I watch these programs, and this guy comes on and says to the host, we can walk and talk at the same time. Comprehensive reform would do so much good for our struggling economy. They need to pass it. The host never asked him, what do you base it on? Let me tell you what the UN has been doing. If you go to the UN websites, it's eye-opening. The UN talks about how last year over $400 billion in remittances went from the first world to the third world. $400 billion. What nobody knows is that comprehensive reform, which everyone keeps referring to as an amnesty, and certainly amnesty is a major component of comprehensive reform, has another component. It would triple the number of H-1B visas, triple them, okay? Think of all the unemployed computer programmers like that woman that we talked about and those other people. It would, for the first time, allow the wives and husbands of H-1B visa holders to be given employment authorization documents. An employment authorization document, or EAD for short, gives the bearer of that document an equal standing in the labor pool with an American citizen. It's not specific for any industry. It doesn't say you have to bake cakes or you have to make candles or you have to be the guy that glues erasers on the ends of pencils. If you have an EAD card, you have the right to walk into a factory or an office or a laboratory and say, here's my degree, I want a job. God help the employer who discriminates against somebody with an EAD card. And it would also grant that card, believe it or not, to the adult children. Of,
yep.
that, of that worker.
Yep.
So
I have a friend of mine complaining about that. Yes. A friend of mine, she has a small farm, and she's complaining about the EAB workers. And she goes, the stuff that you have to do when you have one of them is just outrageous. We've got another BTR host who just called in.
Sure.
He's a friend of mine, Dana Smearman. He has his own show here on Tuesday nights and Sundays. Dana, you're on the air with me and Mike Cutler.
Well, good afternoon, Annie. Mike, first of all,
Dana,
great
thanks
stuff,
for the
Mike.
Call. Thank you for the
listen,
call.
You were, yeah, no problem. Listen, you were talking about Alan Greenspan, which made me kind of pop out of the woodwork here because Alan has my blood pressure up on a daily basis. I don't know if you caught the article that was written in the Wall Street Journal. He's out there pushing his new book in which he claims he absolutely had no role in the housing bubble whatsoever, that all that money they pushed out had nothing to do with it. And, of course, he now just figured out that the massive explosion in entitlement spending may have something to do with Americans and their savings rate being on the decline. So if anybody really takes this guy seriously anymore, I really wish they'd take a real close look at his record and what he is writing. You're right. He's a front man. He's a front man for the corporatists. You know, you've got the same people in line again as in 2005 with this immigration stuff. You've got the Chamber of Commerce out there. You've got the big banks out here. And we know what they want. And I think it's good that you're out here talking on this issue because people have to understand. It's not about xenophobia. It's not about that at all. It's about our economy. It's about the American worker. And that's really what we need to focus on.
Dana, I couldn't agree with you more. And, you know, if you look, see, the nice thing about the records that they create when they speak is marvelous. Because on April 8th, 2005, Alan Greenspan, as chairman of the Fed, went back and spoke to them about the subprime mortgages. You see? So he can try to rewrite history all that he wants. He can't because his words are here. Here's something that's very interesting. He wanted the subprime mortgages. The Bank of America wanted the subprime mortgages. In October of 2003, a gentleman by the name of Stephen McGraw testified before the House Immigration Subcommittee. I've testified before that committee, I think, seven or eight times myself. Stephen McGraw warned that the acceptance of Mexican matricular cards constituted an immediate and clear threat to national security because they were unreliable forms of identity. He even talked about how Middle Eastern men were found carrying those cards. If you wonder about McGraw's credibility when he testified, at the time of the testimony, he was assistant director for the FBI Division of Intelligence. The Treasury Department told the banks basically, we're talking here about Greenspan, you can ignore everything the FBI just told you. This was 2.5 years after 9/11, and Greenspan and company countermanded the advice of the FBI in combating terrorism. How does that make you feel?
No.
Real safe.
Well, it makes me feel about as mad as I've been over the last couple of weeks. We've just gone through, had the country
drug
through.
Let me get you madder. Good, then let me make you madder, Dana, because if I can't sleep at night, as I told Jim Sensenbrenner when he chaired the House Judiciary Committee, I don't want you sleeping at night because I want all of you out there to call up your congressmen, call them up from both parties, call them up in the House and call them up in the Senate, and what you need to tell them is very simple. Don't worry about me not voting for you because I'm not going to. You're a crook. If you can vote against American workers, you are evil. It's not that I'm not going to vote for you. It's that if you don't stop immediately pushing comprehensive reform, I will take every waking minute that I'm not snoring, and I will be banging on every neighbor's doors. I will get them to open up their piggy banks, and I don't care if I can get 3 cents from them. I will take it and give it to anybody. I don't care if the guy comes out of a padded room in the local booby hatchery, and I will support their candidacy against you.
Well, in the great state of South Carolina, there are 3 people running against Lindsey Amnesty Graham, Lee Bright, Nancy Mace, and Richard Cash. And the lead runner right now that's ahead in all the polls and has a proven record as a state senator, highly conservative, and he's passed the legislation and sponsored it personally, is Lee Bright. So anyone want to look up Lee Bright?
I'm going to let you in on a secret. I spoke with Lee, and he seemed like a real gentleman. I was impressed with the conversation we had. What we really need to understand is this. Anybody who votes for comprehensive reform is voting against national security. I wrote an article back in 07, and it was for the Washington Times. And I came to refer to comprehensive immigration reform as the Terrorist Assistance and Facilitation Act. And the reason I said it, and by the way, Senator Jeff Sessions from Alabama liked it so much, he quoted me by name from the floor of the Senate on 3 separate days during the floor debate, and then sent me a certificate commemorating it. The idea of giving millions, and forget this 11 million figure, that's a bunch of bunk, we're talking probably 30 or 40 million, to give all those people identity documents without being able to verify their name, their country of citizenship, or when they entered the United States, or what their criminal or terrorist backgrounds might be, or what their ultimate intentions might be, without even being able to do a face-to-face interview. I want everyone out there to stop and listen to what I just said. I'm going to repeat it. They would not be interviewing millions of illegal aliens who snuck in because they know that under the law they couldn't qualify to be legally admitted into the United States. And part of what the law says, and I started my career as an inspector, the first 4 years of my career, which spanned 30 years, I was an inspector at Kennedy Airport. Among the categories of aliens to be excluded are aliens with dangerous communicable diseases, such as Ebola, resistant tuberculosis, we can go down the list. Aliens who suffer mental illness and are violent or are sex offenders, pedophiles, rapists, and so on. Aliens who have serious criminal histories, drug traffickers, international gang members, gun runners, you name it, murderers, bank robbers, fugitives from other countries who are wanted for committing felonies, aliens who are spies, terrorists, war criminals, aliens who would do damage to us. And then we get to aliens who would take the jobs that Americans desperately need. So if you sneak in right there and then, there's a problem, okay? This bill, comprehensive reform, would give these folks lawful status, an official identity document in whatever name they claim is theirs. In fact, they're doing it now with the deferred action cases. The president said, this is about the children. The age cutoff is 31, boys and girls. If you look at the average terrorist, generally, terrorists tend to be under the age of 30. So we've already given hundreds of thousands of illegal aliens who snuck into the country, allegedly when they were children. But again, what's to prevent someone from lying if nobody can do an investigation? Because nobody is investigating their applications. They are not being interviewed. Now, you know, I tried to call up Senator McCaskill. I doubt she's listening. But Claire, if you're listening, you need to wake up. She was quoted in the newspapers, Claire was. I wouldn't even call her senator. She's not worthy of the respect. Because this is a woman who screamed bloody murder how Snowden could have been given a security clearance. She screamed bloody murder how the shooter at the Navy Yard in Washington could have gotten a security clearance. But on the other side of the argument, she turns around and says, we need to do the DREAM Act, which does this for these people. We need to enact comprehensive immigration reform. And when I called her office, I got some woman on the phone who said, what's this about? And I told her. And I said, how in the world can you support legislation that would provide illegal aliens with identity documents when we know that there are no resources, forget about investigating them, to even speak with them in person? And she said, we will have somebody from the senator's immigration team get back to you. I thought, my God, she has a whole team. I really wanted to find out who the captain of the team was, but she never told me.
Well, here, you want to get even angrier. I brought this up. It was earlier this year when Hillary Clinton was still Secretary of State. She made a private deal with Saudi Arabia. Saudi Arabia, not the United States, will decide who is eligible to come to the United States from Saudi Arabia. Not us. We don't screen them. They screen them, or supposedly screen them. And they decide who should come and who they should keep from coming over.
You mean like Mohammed Atta might have a brother who might want to come here now?
Oh, yeah. And now where was the majority of the people from the 9/11 attack coming from?
It was Saudis. That's why I'm saying it. Because, Anne, do you remember back in 2002 I did one of my first congressional hearings? Everybody probably remembers the hearing. They probably don't remember my ugly mug, which is just as well. But in March of 2002, to everyone's horror, it was suddenly discovered that two of the dead terrorists, Mohammed Atta and Marwan al-Shehhi, had been granted authorization to attend flight school 6 months after the attacks. I was one of the four witnesses called by the House Judiciary Committee. How in the world do they formulate any immigration bill that absolutely 100% ignores the findings and recommendations of the 9/11 Commission? Can you explain that to me?
They're hoping for the American short attention.
Make.
Go ahead.
You know, if you go, well, I said that they have attention spans that are measurable in nanoseconds. But here's the thing. When an airplane crashes and the NTSB and the FAA come out with findings and say, this is why the plane crashed, this is what you must do differently so it doesn't happen again, it's adhered to down to the letter. The 9/11 Commission said that immigration was the vulnerability, that immigration fraud and immigration benefit fraud enabled them to enter the United States and embed themselves. And in fact, in 1993, America was attacked not once but twice by foreign nationals from the Middle East who had gamed the visa process and the immigration benefits program. In January 93, a guy by the name of Amil Kansi shot up the CIA. He was from Pakistan. He had applied for political asylum. He killed two CIA officers and wounded three others and fled the country, which, by the way, is something that transnational criminals, international terrorists can do. They have a trapdoor they can escape through. They can leave the country. In his case, it didn't work, though, because our guys tracked him down and dragged him back here, put him on trial. He was found guilty and executed, but the people he killed remained dead. And while he was waiting, by the way, to do this, he became a partner in a delivery service, a courier service, so that he could drive by the CIA every day in a truck that kind of blended in so he could do surveillance and figure out when and where he should go to carry out the attack. Because most terrorists, the day before an attack, go to their jobs that provide them with mobility and camouflage. The very next month, we had the first attack at the World Trade Center. We had people like Mahmoud Abu Alima, who got agricultural amnesty, a la Chuck Schumer's special agriculture program. He claimed that he had planted beans in a farm in Florida. The only thing he ever planted was a bomb in the garage of the Trade Center that killed six people, wounded 1,000, and almost brought the towers down sideways, which would have caused hundreds of thousands of fatalities. And so you look at that. May 20th, 1997, Ann, I was called upon to testify before my very first congressional hearing by Lamar Smith, and that hearing was on visa fraud and immigration benefit fraud. and it was predicated on those two terrorist attacks. And the date of that hearing was very interesting because it was almost exactly midway between the attacks of 93 and the attacks of 9/11. So the Clinton administration certainly had to know that visa fraud and immigration fraud were components of the vulnerabilities that enabled those two attacks that happened on Clinton's watch to take place, and the response to it was a big fat zero. But I guess, as Hillary would say, what difference does it make?
Absolutely. Now, when I met you earlier this year up at the convention, you know, I had said, you know, that you looked familiar to me, and then I had overheard you talking. We started talking, and I had discussed that I was on duty at the 9-0 on that day in February of 1993. My sister-in-law had worked in the towers, and as we started to talk, a lot of things that we did had overlapped, and I probably saw you walking in and out of the burrow upstairs, but you also were instrumental in that investigation, weren't you?
Well, I was helpful to them. I think there were a lot of smart heads were involved in that investigation, but I was gratified that they called upon me. I worked closely with the subcommittee over the years, and you know, it's so frustrating because when 9/11 happened, I was home. I had injured my leg executing arrest warrants with the FBI and the New York City Police Department. By the way, I have to tell you, the NYPD is the best. I work with a lot of departments. I've worked with the Israeli National Police in 1976. I tripped over a terrorist plot to blow up a refinery in Israel. We prevented it. But the NYPD, I have some of my fondest memories of working with your former colleagues. It was a privilege to work with them. But on 9/11, when this happened, my level of rage was someplace in the stratosphere. I was actually removed as an agent after I testified for Tancredo's Immigration Reform Caucus because I did so without authority. Of course, the excuse that was used was that my leg was bad. I wound up having surgery on my knee. Probably eventually they'll have to give me a new knee, which is fine. It's not a big deal. But that was why I was home. But it was really funny because that the day after I testified for Tancredo, I came home. The next day a package by overnight super-duper express mail arrived telling me I was being removed as an agent. And it was made final on the day that I testified about how Muhammad Atta and Marwan al-Shehhi could be granted authorization to attend flight school. Ultimately, things got squared away. I did get my pension. But, I mean, this is the kind of nonsense that goes on in our government. Our government's primary mission, and I don't care what side of the political spectrum you're on, I think we're all in agreement that job one for our government or any government is to protect the safety and well-being of its citizens. And if it can't accomplish that, then nothing else it does matters one lick. And this undermines our military. You know, most people don't realize this. And by the way, folks, if you become aware of opportunities for speaking engagements, let me know. I'm always willing to go on the road. I'm heading to Minnesota. In fact, on Sunday, I'll be doing a five-day tour up in Minnesota doing speaking engagements. That's the antidote to TV not wanting to cover the immigration issue. I think it's really important. And I'm going to be doing an interview tomorrow for a new network that's starting up called the One America News Network. So I'm excited about that. But, you know, when you're out there speaking with the folks, you have to understand that people don't get it. I was in front of a bunch of Air Force generals and colonels a couple of years ago in Washington, and I asked them why in the world we still had a military. And these guys suddenly looked like Jack Nicholson and a few good men at the court-martial. I thought they were going to want to lynch me. But I said, here's the point. Why do you bother with a military when the primary mission of our armed forces is to keep our enemies as far from our shores as possible, and we already have unknown millions, arguably tens of millions of foreign nationals from every country on the planet living in towns and cities scattered across our country, no record of their entry, no way of knowing where they're from or why they're here. So God forbid if they launch another terrorist attack inside the United States, what good would our stealth bombers, F-22 Raptors, F-35 Joint Strike Fighters, nuclear attack submarines and nuclear boomers, the guided missile cruisers, not guided missile cruisers, the nuclear submarines that launch the ballistic missiles, what good would all of those armaments do us on the day that, God forbid, there's an attack? And realize that Peter King did a hearing when he was chairman of the Homeland Security Committee. They've since done follow-ups. There are increasing numbers of Iranian shock troops arriving in the Western Hemisphere. They are flying directly from Tehran to Caracas, Venezuela. about a year and a half ago, a couple of these knuckleheads were trying to kill the Saudi ambassador, blow up the Saudi embassy, and maybe take out the Israeli embassy. We have no idea who's here, but yet our government strip searches 85-year-old women trying to get on board airplanes, and we x-ray little kids trying to get on planes. This kind of lunacy, after, in fact, the Boston attack, and wherein the Tsarnaev family, it would appear, I'm not making an accusation, but boy, if I was still on the job, I'd be pulling up their file, because they got political asylum, and I'm a big proponent of it. When I was in college, I demonstrated to get LBJ. I'm getting a little bit older than I wish I was. He was the president. But we tried to convince him, to convince the Russians to let Jews and other religious minorities leave Russia to come to America to experience freedom, freedom of religion, freedom of life. And in fact, when I was an inspector, I loved admitting refugees into America because you could see their excitement in starting their lives over here in America. But today, the 9/11 Commission has confirmed this. The political asylum program is being used by terrorists as a way of sneaking into the United States and embedding themselves. The Tsarnaev brothers, who carried out that terrible attack in Boston during the marathon, had been granted political asylum, which means they had a credible fear that if I had to go back to Russia, they would face persecution, imprisonment, torture, or worse. What did they do as soon as they got political asylum? They went back to Russia voluntarily. Don't you think that calls some question into what their real story was?
It definitely does. But also, I want to add one more, because David Gobet exposed this one, that the military bases here in the United States are bringing over foreign workers, majority of whom are Saudis. Now, they show up on the base, and then they disappear, and no one follows up on this. So that we, our own military, is bringing them over as workers. They come in, they show up on the base, and then they just disappear. They don't even know if they're still on the base or if they left the base. They don't know where they are within the United States, and it's an
and
easy funnel for more
doctors. You're right, and we just did another story about how Citizenship and Immigration Services lost track of a million non-immigrant visitors. About 7 years ago, there was a GAO report about how they naturalized 111,000 aliens. They naturalized 30,000 without their files, but gave immigration benefits altogether to 111,000 without their files. And, you know, the DREAM Act and what the president wants to do now is to take illegal aliens and get them into the military as a way of then justifying giving them lawful status. Let me just read a sentence from the 9/11 Commission report. This is found on page 68, folks. As early as December 1993, a team of al-Qaeda operatives had begun casing targets in Nairobi, Kenya, for future attacks. This is the embassy bombing we're talking about. It was led by Ali Mohammed, a former Egyptian Army officer who had moved to the United States in the mid-1980s, enlisted in the U.S. Army, and became an instructor at Fort Bragg. He had provided guidance and training to the extremists at the Farouk Mosque in Brooklyn, including some who were subsequently convicted in the February 93 attack on the World Trade Center. The casing team also included a computer expert whose write-ups were reviewed by al-Qaeda leaders, and it's believed that, in fact, that computer expert was this guy, El Libby, who we just brought to the United States, who never should have been brought here. He should have been taken to Guantanamo. And by the way, one of the people apparently involved in the attack in Benghazi had previously been at Guantanamo, and we had released him. So if you want to talk about reasons to get angry, let me count the ways.
It is so easy to get so angry, and people get boondoggled with the BS, and it always brings me back to mind of the movie, The Best Little Whorehouse in Texas. Charles Durning is dancing, and he's singing, and now you see me, now you don't. He loves to do that little dance, and every time I hear a politician talk, I have that song playing in the back of my head. And
Richard Gere does the same thing in Chicago when he does that tap dance in the courtroom. Have you seen Chicago?
Amazing.
You got to see it.
No, I haven't.
But here's the point, folks. You know, we're getting close to the bottom of the hour, and I got to tell you, the time goes so quickly visiting with you. We have to do this again, and I have to get you on my program. I have a radio show Friday nights at 7 o'clock East Coast time. You know, let's be so clear about this, folks. The immigration laws are not about discrimination. They're about protecting American lives and American jobs. And in fact, it's American minorities who are suffering the highest unemployment rate. And in point of fact, It's the immigrants living in immigrant communities who are most at risk by the transnational criminals who come here. And it's not just from Latin America. It's the Russian mob. It's Asian organized crime. It's the Jamaican drug posses. How do I know? Because I arrested all those slime buckets. I spent half of my career with the Organized Crime Drug Enforcement Task Force. When I was assigned to DEA intelligence before I went over to the strike force, and I spent almost 4 years with the DEA Unified Intelligence, I did an analysis of arrest statistics in the late 80s, early 90s. And I was amazed because in New York City, something on the order of 60%, 60% of the people we were arresting for drug trafficking and related crimes were identified as foreign-born. Nationally, it's 30%. With all the talk about concerns about gun violence, understand that probably 70% of all crime is directly or indirectly related to trafficking in narcotics. You look at the United Nations, they are licking their chops at the prospect that we might enact comprehensive reform, because their estimate is that if comprehensive reform is enacted, the United States will wind up with more money being drained out of our economy. Last year, it is estimated, ladies and gentlemen, that $200 billion was wired from the United States to countries such as India, China, Mexico. So it's not just about Mexico. And there's something that economists refer to as the multiplier effect. If you earn a dollar, you spend it. If you spend it, the guy that makes the money from you goes and buys something else. That's called the multiplier effect. It's generally agreed that if you get a dollar, it's going to generate $5 in business. That $200 billion figure is money that is just ripped right out of the economy. You may as well set fire to it for all the good it does us. And in the winter, if we did that, at least we could get some warmth from that money. But what it really has is the function of removing $1 trillion from our economy. Nobody talks about those remittances. No one talks about the impact on our economy or our balance of payments. So when you hear this nonsense about how comprehensive reform is good for the economy, forget it. And by the way, the UN also noted that sustainability, global warming, also accounts for lots of money coming out of the United States, and they're thrilled about it. So there was this article about how they're spending more on global warming than the border. Here's my quick question, and I raised this with an engineering professor I know. I said, if the scientific method says you have to remove all of the variables from an experiment and just test for that one variable, if we think that it's carbon dioxide that's causing global warming, how do we know that when we don't even know what all the variables are? And I'll tell you what, folks, he had no answer. So these are questions that Americans need to ask. The Science Channel has a wonderful slogan. It says, question everything. And that's what we the people need to do. Question everything and remember that democracy is not a spectator sport. Please go to my two websites, michaelcutler.net, capsweb.org. I look forward to hearing from all of you, and I'd love to be back on with you when you have the time for me. And I want to thank you for the invitation, and I want to thank the callers, except for the first meathead who need some counseling or a spanking, perhaps.
Absolutely, Mike. You know you're always welcome. You're a great friend. And are you going to be up at the convention this coming January?
You know, I don't know. I haven't spoken with Joe Dugan yet. I hope that there's a room for me up there, but we'll find out. And if so, we absolutely have to have dinner.
All right, Mike. Thank you very much. And I'll talk to you later. And
all
Mike
right, thanks
Cutler.
So much. Have a wonderful day, folks. But please go to those websites and get a hold of your congressman and wake them, shake them, and get them to listen to you. Be well.
All right. Be well. We're down to our last few seconds on the show. I wanted to thank Dana for calling in and for Thomas for calling in, wishing Thomas good luck on his new radio show. I want to remind you, on Friday, we are going to scoop the country music industry. Doug Briney will be joining us again. He's got a brand new album that he will debut on the 5th, and we will scoop the entire country music industry, and we'll also talk politics with Doug Briney and play his new album on air. And I'll see you back here again on Friday. I hope everyone enjoyed the show, and I hope everyone has a very healthy and happy week, and we'll see you back here on Friday. Until then, good night, and God bless you all.
If you find
yourself in trouble, count on me, my friend. I'll get right up in trouble.
You've been listening to Southern Sense Blog Talk Radio. Producer and your hostess extraordinaire is Ann Ubelis. The theme music, American Stand Up, is written and performed by Don Fortney. For more from Don, check out his webpage, teapartymusic.web.com. Southern Sense, the proud member of Ghost Fighter Radio and Freedom Media Network. Southern Sense is common sense. Take it out, Don.
American. American, I've got the heart, American.